to FICPE's podcast series, FICPE Focus 45. FICPE is the only international NGO whose membership consists entirely of IP attorneys in private practice. The FICPE global community is driven by a shared interest among like-minded people to promote common solutions and advocacy for private practice. The FICPE business family makes the world a little bit smaller, bringing independent IP attorneys from around the globe together to focus on IP issues of global importance. Our host is Louis-Pierre Gravel, a registered patent agent and partner at Bereskin & Parr in Montreal, Canada.
Welcome to FICPE's webinar and podcast series, FICPE Focus 45. My name is Louis-Pierre Gravel, and I'm a partner at Bereskin & Parr in Montreal, Canada. I'm a registered patent agent in Canada and the United States, and I work in the fields of quantum technology, AI, telecommunications, mechanical engineering, and information technology. Today's topic is the work that WIPO, or WIPO, has been doing in the context of gender issues. With us today, Lisa Jorgensen, who serves as the Deputy Director General, Patents and Technology Sector at WIPO in Geneva, Switzerland. She also manages patent and technology legislative and policy advice and programs relating to the law of patents. She's the first woman in this role and is one of three women Deputy Director Generals appointed on January 1, 2021. She has been designated WIPO's IP and Gender Champion, working on programs to increase the number of women engaged in IP, as well as science, technology, engineering, and math, commonly known as STEM. She was previously the executive director of the AIPLA, the American Intellectual Property Law Association, and group vice president, intellectual property and licensing of ST Microelectronics. Lisa, thank you very much for accepting to be with us today. It's a real honor to have you on our program.
Thank you very much, Louis-Pierre. And let me first say, happy International Women's Day to everyone. Great honor to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. WIPO is a really large organization, and it's got a few core mandates, notably the administration of the various patent, design, and trademark treaties. Your role in particular is focused on patents and particularly the PCT, but you've also been named, as I said, IP and Gender Champion. Can you share with us what that role means?
Sure, and thanks for that question. First of all, as a champion, what we're really working towards is uniformity of our work across WIPO in the sense of knowing what all of the various groups are working on, because we have so many projects going on all throughout WIPO. And being the champion myself and with my new team, we've just finished our first ever strategic plan for IP and gender. We're calling it the IP and Gender Action Plan, or the IP Gap. And being the champion means that we are working towards making sure that we work on repeatable and sustainable projects for women and girls to get them engaged in the IP ecosystem.
We've had other guests come and talk to us about gender issues, women in STEM, and the work that's being done in different fora. What are the objectives that WIPO is trying to reach with this initiative or these initiatives? And what distinguishes WIPO from the work that's being done elsewhere?
Well, let me start with the second question that you asked first. WIPO's ability is really worldwide, where we can reach any number of different types of stakeholders, from governments to the intellectual property offices to stakeholders, meaning corporations, SMEs, individuals, any form of innovator or creator to help them get engaged in the IP system in the area that they're most interested in. So, for example, for the IP offices, how can we work with them and together with them to have best practices on how to get your staff engaged or have sort of gender parity of women in the organizations themselves? That's sort of internal at WIPO, and also where we are working with the IPOs for their own internal capacity for gender balance. We're working with just all around the world with a group of different stakeholders, women who have been working with us to get capacity building, the ability for us to help them network, find them mentors and sponsors. So we can do this on a worldwide basis. And one of the advantages we have is if we build a program for, let's say, a group of women in Africa, Is that program repeatable or sustainable where we could take that program to another part of the world? The answer would be that we need a base program that we start with where we can then tailor make it to the needs of the women in the other area of the world, making sure that we know what their cultures are, what they need to learn, what their issues are, and we can address them through our tailor-made programming, but with a starting point.
Okay, so that's very interesting. And I think having looked at the IP Gender Action Plan, there are three main pillars that you're focusing on, right? So can you explain what those three pillars are?
Sure. We have three pillars and then sort of a foundation that's going to go across all three pillars. The first pillar is to support governments in finding ways to have things like gender neutral legislation that can support women, any kind of policy or program that they want to run that would be most beneficial to helping women get engaged in those programs. The second one is going to be driving research. You know, you can't change what you can't measure. So our economics team has just done an incredible job of finding out what we're missing, what data we're missing, finding ways and new ways to collect that data, analyze it, and be able to use that data so that we can help close the gender gap. And third, I would say, is making sure that we can maintain the programs that we currently have, but also then to pilot new programs in all regions of the world so that we can have the biggest outreach to those who really need to understand a kind of a demystified way, how to understand IP in a way that will help them grow their own economy, their own personal economic situation and development. And we know or believe that if you help a woman with her own economic situation through the use of IP, that will ultimately move into helping the community that she's in, and maybe even the region or even the country that she's in. So if you start with one, it tends to extrapolate to many others down the line.
One of the things that I've noticed, of course, and I'm certain I'm not the only one, is gender issues and this gap that you've identified or spoken about are often firmly anchored in culture. And culture varies widely across the globe. How do you ensure that the work that you're doing at WIPO does, and I think you alluded to it a little bit earlier, but that it presents universal appeal, yet is sensitive to local culture? In other words, some of the initiatives that you're contemplating, and you spoke about Africa, might work well in one country, but may not work well in another country. How do you navigate these cultural differences, for lack of a better word, to ensure that you're consistently and constantly trying to promote the role of women in society more generally, and yet at the same time, you're not colliding with local culture?
No, and that's a perfect question, Louis-Pierre, because we have an entire group internal to WIPO or at WIPO with significant skills and expertise in all the various cultures around the world, and primarily probably in our RNDS sector, which is the regional and national development sector. They understand what the various countries have, their economics, their politics, and the needs of the country. Then when you bring in the expertise of how to run a program for a woman or a group of women entrepreneurs, then they can help us with partnering with people on the ground. So we do also bring in experts that are on the ground in the various regions to help us drive these programs. And once we have sort of what I referred to before as a base program, a starting point of what we would like to achieve, then we can work with our own internal experts, combining that with our partnerships, working with the external experts to tailor make those programs for each and every group that we are in front of. As a good example, on Monday, we started a program, a 5-day program here at WIPO for a group of, and I forget the number, I think it's 22 women from SEBS, or the Central European and Baltic region. Those 22 women were from over a dozen countries. So even though it's one region, you know, all of those women have come from different cultures. And so we needed to tailor make that program, first of all, to the group, and then finding ways to have all the women network and interact with each other in a way that's very beneficial to them, using our own internal experts and external experts.
a lot of the work that you're doing is attempting to shape behavior to a certain extent, because, you know, if we're talking about involving women in STEM, involving women in IP, what we're really underlying, or what we're really trying to do at the bottom, or fundamentally, is to try to change behavior, to get more women involved, to get more women part of the economy. Can you address maybe how you're doing this through the first pillar? So the first pillar, I think, is supporting the governments in integrating a gender perspective into IP legislation, policies, programs, and projects. But how does that translate on the ground?
Well, how that will translate on the ground is for the governments and the IPOs to find or to make their programs accessible to women on the ground, or the SMEs, the entrepreneurs, the individuals. If they have access to these, which is critically important for them to have access to IP and IP tools, but not just access, but are also then taught how to use the tools to their benefit. The governments can do that through their IPOs and other government agencies, but can also do it through shaping their national IP legislation that will allow women to become involved in IP and the IP ecosystem.
You also mentioned a little bit earlier that you've got a team of economists looking at some data and that you're trying to identify pain points. Are there any preliminary conclusions that you can share with us, or preliminary observations?
Yeah, I can make a couple comments here. One is what we know today, which is that women inventors only make up about 16%, right around 16% inventors on PCT applications. And that's just terrible. You know, we need to find a way to close that gap between the 16% and the 84% men. In doing that, the economists have been working very hard, both themselves as well as working with other economists around the world, and particularly at other IP offices, to share data, find out best practices of being able to collect that data. And again, if we can collect it, we know what we don't know, what we do know, and then how we can find our way to the goal that we want, which is first understanding the issue and then being able to measure it and then being able to do something about it. The economists are really working across, as I said, across the world with other economists. And actually, I believe that they will now come out with some new statistics and new ways of measuring data just before the World IP Day in April this year. So stay tuned for that.
All right. We will definitely stay tuned and come back to that. What are some of the mechanisms that you're doing, that you're using to try to spur action?
Well, I'll tell you that I think a lot of the IPOs are as much in favor of working on these issues as we are. So it's a matter of working together to define what more can they do to be able to acquire the data that's necessary, share that data with all the right organizations, and be a part of the process of researching it, analyzing it, and deciding what we need to do next. In most cases, I think this is a very bipartisan or really multilateral issue that everybody wants to get behind. And so I think it's a matter of education and capacity building to help everybody understand what the issues are and then be able to do the right data collection and research. And I think everybody's pretty much on board with that.
That's really wonderful to hear, because it's so important to ensure that every participant in countries is equally represented and has access to the same tools and opportunities as anyone else. And so I think it's an extremely, extremely positive development to see the IPOs being involved in this. There's, of course, one thing which is trying to address gender issues in policies and programs and projects at the IPO level. But we also know that a lot of the R&D efforts are being done within research and development facilities within companies, often within universities. And there are clearly some issues that need to be addressed there. Are you looking at a trickle-down effect from the work that you're doing at the IPOs to reach directly the work that's being done pre-filing of an application at the earliest stages of R&D?
I wouldn't call it a trickle-down effect, because I think we are working directly with many organizations, corporations, associations, SMEs to help them understand through statistics and other data how much better their organization could be if there are more women inventors engaged, if a number of them are able to help get more girls into STEM to fill the pipeline. And when they see what that kind of diversity can do and the kind of return on investment they can have, many of them are more than happy to get on board and try to work at the issues. But, you know, it's still somewhat amorphous. You know, it's really hard to understand exactly what's going to happen next if you work on the gender and IP issues. But I really haven't heard anybody yet say, since I've been here for 2 years now, that they don't want to support this and they will work on issues to the extent that they know what they need to do and they're willing to step up and work on them.
One other question that keeps nagging at me is, I see the value, of course, I see clearly the value in the work that you're doing. I think it's extremely important. I think you have some very interesting initiatives. But as you said earlier, what you can't measure, you can't evaluate or change. And in this case, does WIPO have any measures of success? I mean, where do you think, or when can you say that WIPO has achieved its objectives? What are those data points that would allow you to say something like that?
I'll answer it this way, Louis-Pierre. Every time we put on a program now where we are working with, let's say, a group of 20, 50, or 100 women entrepreneurs and we're training them, what shows is our success is when these women take their own businesses to the next level through the use of IP. And then they become mentors or sponsors to the next generation of entrepreneurs and SMEs. And when we work with individuals, it's not for we come in here for a day or a week, but we work with them for maybe a year or more. And what we do is we start out at the very beginning at saying you have a product or you have a product idea. How do we help you understand how to build a product, how to get venture capital to create a business, how to manufacture the product, how to protect it through IP and then commercialize the product, and how do you even protect it after that? And so we work with people from stage one all the way to commercialization, and then we see what the success is. And when we see these women who have gone through these programs and they're very successful in their own businesses and increase their own economic situation, that's the result of or the success of the work that we're doing.
Are you starting with some regions more than others, or are you really piloting a number of initiatives in parallel across the globe?
Oh, we have so many initiatives that it's hard to keep track of them all, which is part of what our team is trying to do to make sure that we know what everything's happening throughout WIPO and where we can help them, if possible, even enhance their own programs, which is hard to do because we have some wonderful experts in this area inside WIPO. You know, when we're working with them, we just find it very easy for us to reach out to any number of countries. We've done programs recently, even in 2022, in multiple countries. Africa, we had programs in Egypt. We had programs in fact, I will not even be able to remember them all. Jordan and Egypt, where we had 80 and 50, I believe, women entrepreneurs that were handpicked to go through a program of training with us so that they can learn how to use IP for their own success. We had a program of 50 entrepreneurs that were handpicked in Namibia for a program that was then sponsored by several Namibian government agencies that went through the program, I believe, with them so that they can help them continue their progress down the line after the program ends. I think we did this week, the program with SEBS. It's continuing through the end of this week and will continue further than that as well. We've done programs in the Asia Pacific region. We had a program of 50 participants from Sri Lanka, Nepal, Vietnam, India, and China. And that program we found to be repeatable and we took it to Indonesia. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have so many programs going on. Like I said, they're kind of hard to keep track of them all so that we can benchmark what's working and what's not and making sure that everything really is tailor-made to those groups of women, and that we have the best possible outcome for them, or we help them have the best possible outcome for them through the use of IP.
In rolling out these programs and trying to coordinate the work of WIPO that's being done, has there been one program that you are particularly proud of, one initiative that you think has really hit its mark over and above some of the others?
I wouldn't say it's a one country program. I think what WIPO has recently done, say in the last 2 to 3 years, is just amazing, where they have been able to work with governments and then put on a program where they can identify potential entrepreneurs through the women who are the innovators and creators in a particular region, and offer them a program to learn to use IP to help them with their businesses, to grow their business. I think that it's not just a single program that got put on or has been put on, or we have many more coming up in the near future, but it's the concept of what they're doing to identify these women and then bring them along through a progression of stages of the programs that we run. For example, I think with the Asia Pacific Women Innovators and the Entrepreneurs Program, we had a series of 12 episodes that they did, I think, over a 12-week period, so one per week, to help them understand how IP can be used to benefit them and the businesses that they are trying to grow.
In the 2 years that you've been there, have you seen, and it may be premature to look at this right now, but have you seen the numbers change in the number of women inventors named on PCT applications, or has that needle not started to move yet?
Well, I don't think the needle's ever really moved. I would say that we are on an upward trajectory, but as slow as a snail, and that's what we need to change. I think it was only slightly less when I first got here a couple of years ago, but even 5-10 years before that, it still wasn't that much higher or lower than we are at today. We see a little bit of difference between regions, where one region might be a little more than 16%, other regions are a little less than 16%. The overall average is around 16% of women inventors on PCT applications. But my team and all the rest of WIPO under Darren Tang's leadership are really working on trying to find ways to move that needle much quicker.
One of the questions that has come up in the chat, and is an interesting one, currently when we prepare and file PCT applications and we name the inventors, we don't identify gender. So how have you been able to make that determination that approximately 16% are women?
That's the number one question that we're all asking. So we do have a name generation tool where we are able to, in most countries, identify the first name as being either primarily female or primarily male. And it's an extrapolation from that. One of the problems we had in the past with that tool, it was very difficult to identify names from some of the Asian countries, the Chinese, the Japanese, the Korean. And we've gotten a lot better at that now and feel that our tool is much more defined, it's much more focused, and we're able to capture the data, which we believe is a little more accurate than what it's been in the past. And hopefully in this very short near term, we'll find out some more things that the economics group is working on to even increase that specificity so we can have an even more accurate tool.
Is there any talk about introducing identification of gender in PCT application forms, for example?
There's always talk about doing that. The question is, can we do it? And if so, how would we do it? And then thirdly, would it really make any difference? Because I'm sure there will still be a number of countries that won't be comfortable at providing that kind of information or even asking their own inventors for that information. We know some countries are already collecting that data. We know countries like the US are not. So we're working with all of the IPOs to say, you know, what can we do here? And if we can do something, what would we do and how would we do it so that it's really accurate?
And as you say, would it provide useful results?
Right.
if you have tools that you know have a little bit of wiggle numbers in terms of not being able to be absolutely certain whether or not the first name is that of a woman or a man, and you're willing to live with that data, would it really make a difference if you asked for it? I don't know. You might be getting just marginal improvement, right?
I don't think I know the answer to that one, but we are always asking that question to be sure that if the right time comes that it would be beneficial, then we would be prepared to step up. But right now, we're just still in that questioning stage of can we do it and how would we do it?
I know certainly in, North America, in the U.S. where you're from and Canada where I'm from, there's also a debate going on about gender as a topic of conversation and the spectrum that that gender can represent. And we're no longer in a black and white man or woman type of world. There's now a spectrum being discussed or debated or even socially accepted. And so that complicates, I think, the collection of that data a little bit. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the projects that you have in the pipeline that you're willing to roll out or that you're about to roll out?
Sure. First of all, is our first ever strategic plan for IP and gender. It's done, and we have a final accepted draft of it. Now we're just ready to, waiting for the publisher to help us put it all together so that we can get it out publicly. We did, however, have a meeting of all of the Geneva-based ambassadors back in January, in which Darren presented the IP gap, or we made a presentation to all of them on what it is that we've got and what we're trying to achieve. Those three pillars, plus the two foundations, which are collaborating across all of WIPO, as well as collaborating with external partners, and a much more stringent and identified communication strategy that we where we can reach many more people. That's one thing that we're working on, is the making sure that we can get this IP gap out as soon as possible. The next thing actually will be to replicate a lot of the projects that I just mentioned happened in 2022. We have a number of those that we will be starting up. I think there's one that's starting up this month. So we will continue those programs all around the world in various regions, primarily in the developing countries, least developed countries, and the countries in transition, which is where a lot of the women need the most help to understand how IP can help them culturally and economically develop their own businesses. From there, we will be working on a number of other things that are outlined in the IP gap, one being the research on the data. We're working on new programs for researching data with our economics team. We are working on various other things, such as how to partner with organizations to have greater reach in all of their regions. So we have a number of those things in the works.
And you mentioned external organizations. Of course, today, you and I are having a conversation that is mostly directed to members of FICPI. As you know, FICPI is one of the major international organizations when it comes to IP. How can FICPI help you? What sorts of initiatives can we work on together? What sort of things can we do as an organization or through our member countries to help WIPO in these initiatives?
That's a great question for us, because we want to collaborate with organizations like FICPI. We've already always had a good relationship with FICPI, as well as any number of other organizations, but certainly with FICPI. We would be more than happy and very interested in having members of FICPI become expert speakers for us at WIPO on all of our various programs, whether it's IP and gender or a substantive program in patents or trademarks. But as we're talking on IP and gender, you know, we would love to have more speakers from your membership. I think we would also like to see your members take on their own internal role within their own organizations, not just FICPI, but everyone. So finding ways to be mentors for your own women in your own organizations, but even more than just a mentor, more like a sponsor, somebody who, and I learned this a few years ago from a colleague at through my time at AIPLA, which is, you know, to sponsor somebody is more than just helping them understand where their career can go, but sponsoring them would be something like, okay, I'm taking you with me on this next trip I'm going on, or to the next visit with a client, or the next time I go in and see the manager of our department, to be able to bring them along, but not just to have them sit there in the corner, but give them a task to do and let them learn, let them make mistakes, but let them learn what they need so they can grow in their own career.
That is spectacularly inspiring, and I think, you know, I think some people have taken it to heart. We have certainly a few members who are listening to us now who I think would be very, very interested in exploring ways to collaborate, to help, to become a resource in various countries. As an international organization, our reach is global, and we have members from all around the world, and we can certainly assist on that. So thank you very much. I think FICPI leadership will take note of that open door and explore it further.
And of course, I should also mention that we would love to have FICPI members get involved in World IP Day coming up in April. There's a lot of material on our website. If you have any interest in holding a program or helping others hold a program for the World IP Day on the IP and gender issues. And if you need any support, if anybody wants to do something and they need some support on what they can do, we're here to help them know what's possible for your own area, your own groups and organizations.
So I will shamelessly plug the fact that WIPO does have, in fact, a page dedicated to World IP Day, FICPI also. So please, our listeners are invited to visit both pages to see what's available, what's out there, what are the kinds of programs that are being set up, and to volunteer to participate in any way and that you can.
We also have some very exciting initiatives that will be coming up for World IP Day. So stay tuned for that as well.
And I think the members who are listening to us now, instead of being redirected to the Wonder Room, because unfortunately, Lisa won't be able to stay with us after the presentation, but you've been redirected to the World IP Day page on the WIPO website. And I invite you to visit it and explore the various things that are there. Just time is ticking out. There are a few questions that I have regarding some of these projects initiatives. And I know it's still very early on in the process to see, well, this is more effective than that, or this has had a greater impact. Is there, of all the various initiatives, and it comes back to the question I asked earlier regarding, you know, is there one program that you favor particularly, is there, you think, and I suspect the answer is going to be, well, all of it's important, but is there or are there some mechanisms or some policies or some initiatives that one should probably start looking at to start with? In other words, are there some that will give you the greatest impact for the effort that you're putting in?
That's a really tough question, because I think there are a number of things that we are doing so much better than we used to do, to the point that we are finding them repeatable and sustainable projects that we can take from one area to another. I think one very interesting thing for us is that we also now have a youth coordinator here at WIPO, and between our youth initiatives, SMEs, and women, we're really reaching out to so many more people than ever before. And we're also, something that Darren also opened up a bit when he got here was our communication strategy, our outward communication strategy, so that we reach so many more people than we ever did before. I think the combination of those things really, really helps us demystify IP so people understand it and find ways to use it for their own benefit.
And I think you said a magic word there, and that is demystify IP. Yep. And, you know, when we as a group of FICPI members get together, it is a recurring theme in the conversation. There is still a significant amount of mythology that surrounds intellectual property. There are people out there who identify themselves as IP experts, but when you start scratching the surface, as professionals, we find that it's not exactly the way it actually is. And I think FICPI in particular, part of the organization, has been doing a lot of work to address this demystification of IP issues.
I think you're right on that point. I think that what we have to figure out is how to go beyond the experts in our language and how we speak about intellectual property. So just as a simple example, instead of saying inventors and trademark owners, let's talk about innovators and creators. You know, take it to a point where it's a much more business-oriented topic than it is a pure IP legal topic. And when you can find ways to show business people how to use IP in their own language, you've already, taken it to the next level, I think, in being able to show them what they can do with IP.
And I think that's another point where FICP and WIPO can work in that, sharing some of the best practices in terms of adjusting the language that is being used. And sometimes that can make a big difference.
True. Thank you.
One of the things that FICP has done is that we've asked our members to identify innovative women. And we're collecting a list of these wonderful, inspiring leaders on our World IP Day page on FICP.org. And so I know this is a shameless plug for the FICP website, but certainly we can cross-link that to the WIPO website.
Perfect. We're doing the same, but we encourage all of you to continue to do that. It's really important that we identify role models for the next generation.
Thank you very much. Lisa, our time is coming to an end. Are there any last thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think the only thing I would say is that let's not treat this as a one-day event, the International Women's Day or even the World IP Day. We should be looking at this at 365 days a year.
Yeah, I think you're preaching to the choir, and I think everyone is on the same page on that. And I think most of the initiatives that are being rolled out within WIPO, within FICP, have that squarely in their sights, that this is not just a one-day or two-day out of the year event. This is something that needs to be thought of, looked at, considered, and acted upon every single day of the year. Lisa Jorgensen, Deputy Director at WIPO, 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 I'm not quite sure what the preferred terminology is, but thank you very, very, very much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it. And for the listeners, stay tuned on the FICP page for the next episode of the Focus 45 series of webinars and podcasts. Thank you.
Oui, Pierre, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
If you have any questions about the topics discussed in this podcast, you can sign up for free and message us, ficp.org. You can also find out more of what's to come on the FICP Focus 45 podcast series, either on the events page of our website, LinkedIn, or via our newsletter. See you next time.